gift of gab,
a radio show for all, but centered on issues that matter to women. Join the conversation on the request line, 231-722-8338 on WUVS 103.7 The Beat, where your voice matters. You're listening to the gift of gab.
Good afternoon.
Hey, everyone. I'm so glad that you tuned in. If I can get my little tongue together, I've been drinking my tea in hopes of getting my thoughts and my mouth and things in sync. So welcome to the Gift of Gab, and it is just so wonderful to be here. It's beautiful out, and I don't know how many more of these beautiful days we have as far as weather, but to me it's always a good day.
Yes.
And I am just so grateful that I have family here today, meaning maybe not by blood, but definitely spiritually. And so before I introduce my guests, if you have just tuned in, and maybe this is your first time tuning in, this is the Gift of Gab. And you know, it's a play. I haven't explained the title in a while, but I felt like the Lord gave it to me. It's a play on words that, you know, I was thinking, what can I name this show? And I was out on a hike, I was walking, and it came to me. You know, sometimes people say that women, you know, because I wanted it to be focused on women, and, you know, I feel like there's people who say that women run their mouth.
We do.
We run our mouths. And you know what? I thought about the Gift of Gab, and you know, we are, in effect, during this show, running our mouths, but it's all positive, and it's all for a good cause, and there are issues relevant to us. And so I'm so excited to be talking today to Miss Irma Gordon Starr. Wait. Let me get this right. Irma Gordon Starr Gibson, right?
Irma Gordon Starr Gibson, you got
okay.
it.
Okay. I want to get every name in there.
I had to name them.
And we're actually doing a spotlight on local authors. And so Miss Irma, which I affectionately call her Miss Irma, and I don't even know how long I've known you. I feel like since I've been in Muskegon, 20-some years I've known you. And also Miss Pam Chandler. Miss Pamela, or is it Pam? What can I call you?
I like Pam.
Okay, Pam. And Pam, we go back to going to church together, and I remember when your kids were younger, and yeah. Now they're full-grown adults.
Yes,
and
they are.
And so, but we're talking about the books that you all have written. And before we dive into the books, and we're going to start off with Pam, but you know, Miss Irma, you just interject, and we're going to start off focusing on Pam, and then we'll move to Miss Irma and her book. So Pam, the focus. What made you write your first book? First of all, let's get the titles. What are the titles of your books?
My first book is God's Healing Hands. And my second book is soon will be out the second week of October. It is called Precious Moments with the King.
Okay.
It's my 30-day devotional. And my last book that's going to be out hopefully by the end of December is called The Journey.
Okay, you've been a little busy.
Wow. Yeah.
Now, the first one was God's Healing Hands,
God's
did you
healing
say?
Hands.
Now, when did you release that?
I released that in the early part of 2013.
Okay.
After my journey coming through breast cancer, I wrote it during that time.
Okay. And I know, like, I'm not ashamed to say I've been to therapy, okay? I like therapy. Mm-hmm. And I remember my grief therapist said, if you can write, that is cathartic. That's part of your healing.
Yes,
and so
is
that kind of maybe part of how you got sparked writing during that journey?
Well, actually, I've been writing since I was younger. I used to always have diaries as a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And writing your diary, and it's a form of therapy for me because it releases a lot of stress and pressure sometimes when you at a point where you say, I'm not going to cry about it, I'll just write about it.
Okay.
And so that's what I do. I do a lot of writing, and it releases, and it is healing.
Mm-hmm. And you know, those emotions have to go somewhere. Those feelings have to go somewhere. And so instead of bottling them up, we put them somewhere. Put them on paper.
Pen and paper, yeah.
So before we go into the book, tell us about, you were one that faithfully got breast exams.
Yes, I did.
Right?
Yes, I did.
And so you had been getting your exams, but you still felt, if I remember right, something wasn't right. Something wasn't quite right.
Yes, it is. it's a feeling when you know your body. And as women, and as African American women, we sometimes be afraid to go get the exams, but it's needed. You have to do that because early detection is the best detection.
Okay.
And I found my own. You know what? Even after going getting the mammograms done faithfully every year, they'll tell you to come back. They saw something and they want to take another picture. Don't be afraid. Go back and get that picture done, because that very picture could be the one that can save your life.
Which I
found my own, and thank God to that. It's a story behind it, but you know, it's a little personal. So
okay,
but
well, it's amazing that it was detected.
It was detected.
So walk us through that. I know it had to be a dark time.
Very horrific. Even though you have a relationship with Christ, as I do, in the natural realm, once you find out that you have any form of cancer, you immediately go into that fear factor.
Yeah, human mode.
Human mode, you're right, human mode. And it's very scary. You know, you try to trust and believe and stand on the word of God, but sometimes dealing with this situation with cancer is the most fearful disease on the planet right now. Because it takes you through so many emotions. I developed insomnia where I wouldn't even sleep at night because I was afraid if I went to sleep, I wouldn't wake up.
Wow.
But praise be to God, once you get back in that mold, which I did, it took me a while because I know I believe in God and I am a believer. But when you're trying to pray, that fear overpowers sometimes more so than that depth of you saying, I'm trusting and believing what you are. But just dealing with that everyday thing of, Lord, why me? Why me?
How were you told? Was it a biopsy? I mean, and when they brought you in, what? Was it a phone call, or did they bring you in? How
did
you told?
I had a biopsy, and they found it, and it's some cancers are aggressive and non-aggressive. Mine was non-aggressive, praise be to God.
Yes.
And it was contained right in the ductal area.
Okay.
So, and it wasn't spreadable, but that was because of early detection.
Okay.
So if I'd have let it linger on, it could have become aggressive.
Okay.
And it could have went into my lymph nodes. Well, praise be to God, it didn't go there.
Yeah.
So I was fortunate not to deal with chemotherapy, but I had 38 treatments of radiation.
Really? Okay. And the difference is?
Chemotherapy is it's not a good drug, but it's helpful to some extent, but radiation is a burning process.
Okay.
So it kills the bad cells, but it weakens your good cells as well. So at that point, it makes you tired just like chemotherapy do. But I got up off that table every day, five days a week, 38 treatments.
Wow.
So
did you miss work? Because I know some people who work through it.
I was off about a year and a half with that. And it's going, working through you, it's a constant battle working through, because I'm still working through it. Because you become a survivor, but you're still working through it.
Okay.
You still have to go get your mammograms regular, more so than where I used to go once a year. I have to go twice a year.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Wow. So, and the burning, I mean, is that like a laser?
It's a laser. It's just, you don't smell it, you can't see it, but it's a laser, and it burns the flesh.
You feel
and
it?
You feel it. Your
you
skin,
smell it?
No, but your skin falls off.
Oh, wow.
You know, and it returns back, though, after the healing process. But it's really, really tiring, and I remember just walking right here where we had across Marshfield. Every morning, 5 days a week, I would get off that table, and I had to walk to restore my good cells, to restore my energy. And at that time, it was just me and God. And I remember asking the Lord, why me? He said, why not you? He said, because what you're going through is not for you. It's for somebody else. So once I got to that point in my life and began to deal with the fear issues, I began to write. And I wrote my days. It was like a roller coaster, up and down. Some days were good days, a lot of days were bad.
Is it hard to look back on those journals or even the book because you can be so specific and you say, wow, it was only God carrying me.
It was. It's hard to look back because God's healing hands, I haven't even went back and picked it up and read it again after I wrote the book. It's an easy read, but the memories of coming back to that area of my life, it was a real dark time.
What was your biggest support? What was your support system at that time?
Christ first, mm-hmm. but the biggest support system was my Aarons, my husband and my children.
Okay.
Everybody needs an Aaron, like Moses had Aaron. My husband Breck and my son Breck Jr. and my daughter Isis were my biggest supporters. They were my caregivers. My daughter left school. She was at Western and came home to take care of me.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
My son was living in Grand Rapids at that time, and he was back and forth on the highway coming home. And, of course, my husband was there.
Brother Bragg.
That's my soulmate.
To be honest, you and Brother Breck are a whole other radio show. And I'm going to remember y'all around like Valentine's Day because I want to do like a segment on couples that have been through some stuff.
Yes.
And y'all, when I look at y'all and I'm like, now that's a testimony.
Nothing
and
but God.
Nobody would know. Isn't it something how people say, you don't know what I've been through. Mm. You don't know my story. Mm. I don't look like what I've been through. But it's only God. They say, I just wish I could be like you, honey.
No, you don't.
You don't know.
No,
you don't want to walk in. Be careful when you ask to walk in somebody's shoes.
Are you willing to take what the person went through?
But how wonderful that he was there for you in that time. And
he still is.
Yes.
That's it.
As I know, you are there for him.
Yes, I am.
So wonderful. So what kind of feedback have you received from your books?
I have gotten a lot of feedback, mostly with God's Healing Hands. Mm-hmm. I took a lot of them into the Johnson Cancer Center, and
wonderful.
I seeded them. I wouldn't sell them.
Awesome.
And right to this day, any woman that I know or heard of that had breast cancer or dealing with it, I'll seed a book to them, because it's a tool, and it's not just for just breast cancer. It's anything you're going through, diabetes, mm-hmm. any type of sickness, God's Healing Hands. In the faith of me writing it, is trusting in the promises that he has for us. I literally wrote scriptures down and put them in my shoes. I was standing on the word of God during this battle in my life because I had to go back to that part of belief because the enemy plays with your mind so bad in sickness and fear to where once you have to go back and get in that word and see what God has for you and the promises for your life, you have to trust the word of God.
Do you find that you're going back to those same scriptures? Because I know you've, talked a little bit about other issues in your body, and other challenges. Mm-hmm. And so is it like, I know for my sister who's a cancer survivor, she always says she has to bring it back to basics and say, okay, but this isn't cancer, and if I could get through that. So, and I know like you have, sometimes we talk about other ailments, that you might have.
Mm-hmm.
So do you find that just going back to that and going back to that time?
Going back with those scriptures. It's the scriptures that you bring into remembrance. And like I said, my favorite is Jeremiah 29:11. I know the thoughts that God has towards me.
Yes.
So despite what I go through, but the cancer that I went through, but I never took ownership of it.
Mm-hmm.
And any other ailments that I do, I continually remember everything that has a name had to bow down.
How did you find out that you... Powerful. You have to acknowledge that. How did you find out that you could publish? Because this is... Both of you all are self-published, I believe.
Yes.
And I think that is wonderful because nothing really holds us back from writing a book anymore. It used to be you had to be discovered or you needed an agent and you needed a big publishing house. Mm-hmm. And now you can put a little something down and boom, you got a book.
Mm-hmm.
And you can distribute it. Like you said, if you want to go to the Johnson Cancer Center or what have you. So tell me about how you discovered maybe this publishing company. Who was it that you went through?
I went through 48 Hours Publishing, but my spiritual mother, she lives in Lansing, Michigan, Corinthia Calhoun.
Mm-hmm.
She thrust me into this project of me writing. She was with me during this journey with my cancer battle, and I was journalizing my original godmother, Joyce Russell. She's gone on to be the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
She would always buy me journals because she knew I liked to write, and she was a writer. And during this time, she was in my life, and she bought me a beautiful journal, and I filled it up one day, and she brought me another one. She said, just keep writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to Miss Calhoun, and she said, well, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm journalizing. She said, well, you know that's a book. I said, no way. No way. And she said, if it was, what would be the title? And God had already given it to me, God's Healing Hands. And that's what it was. And I just began to write down my personal thoughts and then worry about the chapters, because he will give you the name as you write. And that's what I did. And then went through 48-hour publishing, had my own editor. She designed my book cover. She paid for my editing, Miss Calhoun. So all I do is write, and she get it out.
Wow, how awesome. Yeah.
And why did you say no at first? Because I know there's people out there listening who others have told them that they have a story to write, and they might, you know, may be resistant. So what was your reason?
I said no because it was so personal.
Okay.
Cancer is so personal. Breast cancer was so personal. And what you go through, you have a spirit of feeling ashamed and hurtfulness and the change in your body that a woman goes through with that. So it became real personal. But now it doesn't even matter.
Wow.
Because I'm going to share. I'm going to tell. And as women, we have to get checked. You just cannot. It's no other way around it, because that life you saved may be on. Fear comes in. Yes, it does. But once you get checked, then you have help saying, now I can get healed. Now I can stop this thing that entered my body without my permission to be healed from that.
I want to reinforce that you were someone who, as we said at the beginning of the hour, you were someone who did regularly get checked,
yes,
but there was something that was amiss. There was something that you felt wasn't right, and you insisted on them following up. And I think I see this push now with medicine where we are to be preventive and we are to be active, proactive in our own care, right? We can't really 100% rely on a doctor or physician to, you know, to diagnose or what have you, because like you said, we know our bodies.
And to reiterate with that, Teresa, it's not always genetic. And it says it's genetic if it comes through the mother. My mother never had breast cancer. And I have, I'm a sibling of six sisters. One had it, but hers was not genetic either. Sometimes one out of five women would get some form of breast cancer in their lifetime. And I was that one person.
Wow.
Out of that five,
And you kept, because I remember I had a procedure done a few years ago, and the next year after the procedure, I wanted them to, you know, do a test. And they said, oh, well, we don't need to do that, because usually after we do the procedure, everything's all good. But I needed that peace of mind.
Right.
So I pushed for the test, and it kind of took a minute. But sure enough, they didn't find cancer, but they found a growth. And they said, you know what? We're going to go ahead and go in, and it warranted doing another procedure.
Right.
So what if, you know,
if you did?
I'm just learning at this age. I'm old enough, and hopefully, Lord, please help, wise enough, that we got to trust those instincts.
You have to.
We got to trust that gut. And a lot of times, it's really the Holy Spirit, you know, prompting us and saying, you know what, why don't you just follow through with this, or how about you check into this, or what have you? And you know, what if I would have let it go and just say, oh, well, she said they don't need to do it. And I didn't have any feeling. I didn't have anything tangible that I could say. It was just it was just something that I needed, a peace of mind. And so,
and likewise, that was with me. I had a heaviness in my breasts. My breasts became really heavy, and that was something unusual for me. So if any woman feel that in your breasts, that you have to do self exams, which I did that as well. But that heaviness is a sign, because that's something that's abnormal. That's a lot of fluid beginning to build in that breast. Which can, you know, like I said, it's a form of cancer, and that's what happened with me.
And now, so God's Healing Hand has been out since, you said, 2013?
Yes.
And so now your other two are back-to-back coming out this fall.
Yep, I have a book coming out, my new 30-day devotional, Precious Moments with the King.
Okay.
They are personal devotionals that I dealt with, and I pray with, and meditate with God. So I put them in a book. And hopefully there'll be benefits, you know, those that are the readers that read it. And I have a little promo t-shirt that I have going with it. It's not a lot of them. It's just something to go along with my book. But I'm super proud of that. I'm really proud, because with working and being a mom and a wife, and it's multiple things that you're doing around of a day, but to take time to be able to get in the presence of God and to meditate and to be have some personal devotional time with Him, it's a lot. It's, it's really beautiful.
So is it several topics, or is it one subject area?
Each day is a different topic.
Okay.
You know, my precious Savior, or sometimes quietness brings confidence. So it's just a lot. Each day is different, and then it's a page for the reader to write their personal thought, what they got out of that,
like that
devotional that day.
Okay. And then the journey is this winter. What is the journey about?
The journey is really going to be powerful. It's a process of where I was 6 years ago, dealing with breast cancer, the loss of my mother during that time from dementia, that spirit of depression. Dementia was a really bad thing for people, and that they have to deal with it. And seeing my mom go through that, I shared a part in that about her and my siblings and I, and how we dealt with that, dealing with to see our mom go through something like that, and the caregivers, the help that they, it's other help out there for them besides just, you know, family help. But
was she local? Was
my mom was local. She was blessed a little higher. She was. People knew our mother through her children, because my mother was a homebody. She stayed home. She didn't work. She took care of children. Mm-hmm. She raised 10 children by herself.
Wow.
That's a hard, you know.
10 children.
We came back and took care of her, and miss her a lot, but she's here.
She is.
And the journey is, like I said, it's different chapters in there about the different names of God and who He is to me, where I'm at now with Him in my life as I go on this journey.
So great. Gosh, I'm so excited about these books. And I think what we'll do, and you know what I forgot to say before we take a quick break, I forgot to encourage you all, I'm so sorry, to call us on the request line, 231-722-8338. And we're going to take a short break. And Pam, I just love you so much.
Thank you
for coming to talk to us about your books.
How do we get them? The King is on Amazon, so you can get that. Or you can inbox me and
let me know when when the journey is published, and that way we can, you know, get it out on our social media.
Thank you.
Yes, and come back. Yeah, Brother Brett, just go on and let him know that Sister Teresa want him to come back. Come on, and y'all come on and give your testimony. Yes. I would love that.
Thank you so much. We love to be here too.
So you're listening to The Gift of Gab on WUVS 103.7 The Beat, and please don't go too far. We will be right back.
Gift of Gab, 103.7 The Beat.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us again with The Gift of Gab. And I'm Teresa Taylor Williams. I don't even think I said that in the first time. But yes, I'm your host, Teresa Taylor Williams. And we are celebrating local authors. And this is the first of many that I hope to do, because I know a lot of people out there who have written books. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to start with two of my favorite people. And that's Miss Irma Gordon Starr Gibson. And then Pamela Chandler. And Pam did have to leave, but that's okay, because we got a lot of meat out of her today.
Yes.
She talked about her books. And if you would like to call, maybe if you have a question about a book or about any of our guests, you may call and request on the request line, 231-722-8338, or go online or go on our Facebook page. You're welcome to do that. So, Miss Irma, how are you feeling today?
I'm great.
You're always smiling. You always look so put together. I have to tell you that. We talked about that earlier.
Thank you.
And so tell me, this summer you did a lot of traveling.
Yes.
Seems like down south, right?
Down south, Las Vegas, all those family things.
Okay. Now, you have a daughter in Atlanta?
Yes.
It's Kamika in Atlanta?
Mm-hmm.
And then Jesse's in Mississippi?
Mm-hmm.
And you have a host of family in Mississippi?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Now, the other two, April is in Grand Rapids?
Yes.
And then your other son, what's his name?
Devon. Devon is in Georgia.
Oh,
along
he
with
is.
Kanika. She's in Georgia as well.
Okay, great. And so how many grands?
Oh, six.
Nice.
My 50-year-old son has a set of twins.
I've seen them on Facebook.
7 months
old. So
yes, 7 month old twins that I'm having a ball with.
Oh, wonderful. Are they boy and a girl?
Boy and a girl.
Oh,
yes.
Now, in your book, you have a book titled, and it's an interesting title, Whoever You Are, Wherever You Are, It's Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. And you incorporate your family into this book.
Yes.
This is your life story so far, I like mm-hmm. to say, so mm-hmm. far. This is your life story, and there's so much in it. There's mm-hmm. pictures, it's wonderfully written. So, and it was written, don't tell me, because I have this, it was published in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, because I'm quite sure you had thought about long before this, writing this, or what sparked you to put pen to paper at that time?
Never ever thought I would write a book. I was a slow starter in school. In fact, I failed fifth grade.
No.
Yes. Had to repeat fifth grade.
Oh.
So writing, I journaled. But nobody paid attention to what I wrote about but me, mm-hmm. you know, my mm-hmm. spelling, my grammar, none of that. It was whatever I put in there. Sometimes I would just initial things, but I knew what they meant. Mm-hmm. Others just didn't. So writing a book was not part of who I was.
Okay. But what was it? Why did you decide? What made you? Because I'm sure there's people out there listening who think that maybe they have the inclination to write a book, or maybe others have told them, you know, you should really put your story out there. So what was it that kind of put you over the edge, so to speak, to write this?
I have been journaling since I was on a calendar, mind you. I would journal on a calendar every day since about, I say, in the 70s, I started to journal. And I wanted to outdo myself, mm-hmm. you know, at home. I thought I was the best homemaker ever born, because I was raised in Mississippi and I knew how to work.
Okay.
So, and then I worked a second job. I worked two jobs. I worked at Steckity's part-time, and then I worked at Seal Power.
Okay.
So I wanted to journal on the calendar every day so that I could compete with myself. So I just would get up in the morning and I would journal what time I got up, what I would put on, what I was going to do, what I was going to cook. And I mean, the whole calendar page, and I saved all those calendars, by the way. The whole calendar was just journaled up. And then I put little stickums on them, you know.
I love stickers.
Oh, yes.
I am a sticker girl. I love stickers. So why did you, when I think of a calendar, I just think of a little tiny square. What are you talking about when you said you
were? I would get those big desk calendars.
Oh, okay, okay.
And because I could see, I could put little astrals on them,
yes.
you know, this is what I was going to do, this is what
yes.
I'm going to accomplish this day.
Okay.
And to this day, I still have a calendar in my mind. Every day I get up with a purpose. I get up with what I expect to accomplish on that day.
Did it make you feel good when you would look back and see all that you had done maybe in the past week or
yes,
the past month?
Yes,
and
I measure what I used to do with what I do now.
Okay.
I said it was once in me, and I still try to compete with myself.
Okay. And so you said you wrote the book because you're kind of wanting to go a step further.
My children is the reason why I wrote that book.
Okay.
I started a child care center in 2004 in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Between jobs, just devastated, going through it. Well, I had started going through it. Well, not going through, I was in a divorce. Mm-hmm. I had been divorced.
And after how many years?
Oh, after 25.
Wow.
25 years.
Okay.
My children's dad decided that, you know, he was ready to move on,
mm-hmm.
and it
mm-hmm.
wasn't to take me with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lost.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to write in notebooks, just mm-hmm. write and, you know, I still have those books with tears, with that some of the the ink has faded together, you know. And writing was therapeutic. It was something that got me from mm-hmm. point A mm-hmm. to point B.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I would wake up writing in the morning, because I would write what time I woke up. I slept with it. Between the Bible and my notebook pad, I slept with
it. So writing was obviously very comforting for you.
I tell anybody.
It was your go-to.
Yes. I'll tell anybody. Write your stuff down.
Yeah.
You know, don't use your fists. Don't use your mind for mm-hmm. anger. Mm-hmm. And if you are going to be angry, put it on paper so that you won't go out and hurt nobody. It'll be all out by the time you finished. By the time you get done writing, you won't have to box.
You know, you spoke of your divorce, and it seems like that's kind of at the point where I had met you. I feel like you had not been long divorced when I met you. And for anybody out there who has experienced divorce, you know that it is potentially so devastating.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I had some grief therapists on here recently, and they insist that a lot of people don't really grieve divorce. They don't grieve like they should, you know, because it's a loss. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a loss.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure in this book, I didn't read all of it. I did go through it, but I didn't read all of it. So were there ever parts, were you pretty candid? If I know you as a person, you don't really pull any punches. I love it, though, because I'm from the show me state. I'm from Missouri. What you see is what you get.
Exactly.
I'm not good at fronting for anybody.
Exactly.
So did you put some of that raw emotion into the book?
Yes, I did. Okay. I put all of me in that book simply for my children. Everything that I did in that book
mm-hmm.
was for my children, my grandchildren, children I would never meet, my great-great-grandchildren. I want them to know whoever you are, doesn't matter if you're a deacon or a preacher in the church. It doesn't matter if you are president of the United States. Well, look at Trump. That's a good example. It doesn't matter who you are. You're going to go through some stuff.
Yes.
And that stuff is not going to look good on you
okay.
because of who you think you are, you know. But you have to wear it and deal with it. And it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. You just don't hurt anybody else in the process.
Okay.
You take the beatings rather than giving them to someone else verbally or physically mm-hmm. because you can't take that stuff back.
Right.
You know, so whatever you do it within you so that you can say, I forgive me. And you don't have to plead with someone else from...
You really put so much of yourself into this book.
I mean,
from a child in Mississippi growing up in the country to, you know, your wedding and so many wonderful pictures of family and your memories. I mean, this is to be treasured by your if by no one else than by your family. And I really need to share because I love how detailed you are. Everyone cannot, and I've taught college writing for the past 7 years, and trust me when I say everybody cannot... I'm not being funny, but everyone is not detailed or vivid, but I really love your description here. You said, Mama's cornbread was made with buttermilk that was milked from old Bessie the cow and churned for butter till my hands were red and sore. Yes, I can see me now sitting on a bucket beside that old cow, pulling...
Say it. Say it. You'll be said for you.
Can I say the teats? I don't want to say...
Tits.
Okay, we'll just say you were milking the cow, but and then later you said, I beat the milk with the churn dasher up and down for hours before it looked as if there would be even a bump of butter. My hands would be red and sometimes a blister would show up and burst before a full cake of butter would settle on the sour milk. I would churn fast then slow. I would be exhausted to the point of tears before butter came. It seems like hours before even a speck of little yellow bumps of butter would appear on top of the milk in that churn. Oh, but when the yellow bumps started, it wouldn't take long before big, thick, fluffy yellow butter was all over that creamy sour milk. I just loved to gather the soft, creamy butter off the milk. I played with it. This is just like a kid would do. I played with it to make all kinds of designed little butter cakes before the butter was put in the refrigerator to set. And then lastly, this is what made me hungry, honey. You said, my mouth forms with saliva as I think about the taste of fresh country butter in between some good old delicious and fluffy hoe cake biscuits. What's a hoe cake?
A hoe cake
I've
is just one big fat, well, that's just leftovers from when you get tired of making the little small biscuits
uh-huh.
and putting your hand around them and
uh-huh.
buttering them and patting them out and put them in the pan.
Uh-huh.
And I do my hot water cornbread like that now. But it's the, when you get tired of making them little bust, you just make one big hoe cake, one big fat
okay.
biscuit and let it rise.
Okay. And you said, in between some good old delicious and fluffy hoe cake biscuits dipped in my daddy's sweet tasting sorghum molasses that piled my plate in the mornings. It always went good with fried wieners or fried bologna. But if we had a few chickens left from the chicken killing the year before, it was fried chicken for breakfast. We might luck up on a jar of home canned wild blackberries to feast on at the kitchen table. Now, for me, that was good eating. It just tastes
good. I could see it as you were as you was reading it.
I could see
myself. I went back into my childhood.
And Matt, I read that because this was just an example of how vivid you really took some time and some detail. That's a writer. And like you said, the calendar, the things you do with the calendar, the journaling. You were practicing all these years being a writer, and now look. So 2010, this was published. Anything else coming down the pike, or have you published anything else? I haven't heard you talk about anything.
Well, you know, I wrote a grandchildren's book. It's an alphabet book, and it's kind of rhyme. But it's dead because I got two more grandchildren to add to it. Right now, I'm in the process of doing... Now, none of these books that I'm writing is basically for publishing as that one was, and that one was just for my children.
Okay.
The recipe book that I'm doing has my kids' favorite recipe, their picture, a scripture. I have, and I've started that already, and it's really fun doing it because now I'm having to measure stuff as I cook. You know, I cook with a little pinch of this, a little pour of this, and you know, a little, but now I have to actually measure so that I can put it the correct way and then taste it to see if it's going to taste right after I measure.
What a fun project. What a nice project.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I remember you told me, I ran into you once, and you said that you like to cook for your neighbors, or you cook vast quantity amounts for a lot of different people. And so do you still do that?
I still do. I cook. I cook. I love cooking. And that's because I don't like restaurant. At night, I get hungry. And I like to go to bed and eat my food in my bed. That's the reason why a husband is really going to have a problem with me, because I'm going to have to bring my plate with me. I like to go to bed and eat. I don't like to sit at the table and eat. I like to go to bed and get on the computer, put the computer in my lap, and put the water or the Kool-Aid or pop or whatever on the side of the bed, and pull my knees up and put my plate in between my knees and get the computer. And oh, girl, you
and
just
you
don't know.
Scratch, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, nothing like scratch.
Do you still can?
Yes. Well, you know, I was telling one of the guys before, I says, I've been gone so much. I have not made my jelly this year.
What?
I have not made my cha-cha this year.
So you always make that stuff.
I know it.
So are you still going to?
No, it's too late. It's too late.
Okay.
I got too much going on.
Did you have a garden, or do you go to the farmer's market?
I put a shed on my garden to put stuff in it.
Oh.
My yard sale stuff, my Goodwill stuff, my stuff.
So your garden is gone.
It's gone.
Oh.
I get other folks' stuff.
Oh, God. Do people still leave you stuff on your stuff?
Yes. Yes. They leave me stuff in the chair on my porch. They call me up and says, there's a bag hanging on your doorknob.
And Janae, you know, they're not funny because they leave stuff so that she can cook.
Yeah. I got a zucchini right now. I got to go home and make a zucchini bread because my girlfriend always gives me zucchini.
Yes.
She gives me cucumbers. I have to make. I'm forced to cook.
Yes.
So I'm forced to give stuff away because after it's there for a day, I don't want to throw it away.
Right.
And I have a dog next door that I feed. He don't care what he eat because he's sick of eating that, you know, that
You're
dog.
Always mindful of other people.
Well, I
love that.
Got two neighbors across the street. I mean, across the fence. So I'll call them and I'll say, I'm in the back, you know, come out the back and I'm going to reach this plate across the fence. They done start buying me. One of the neighbors has started to buy me these carry-out dishes.
Oh,
because
no, they didn't.
I would stack up with carry-out dishes.
She's like, you just keep it coming. I'm going to give you the dishes.
Yeah, yeah. My nieces, my nephews, my sister-in-laws. I just
What's
cook.
Some of your favorite stuff to cook?
Well, I just learned a new recipe thanks to April. April, but she, you know, she's here once a week, and she does hair at Yance's.
Yes.
And she says, Mom, I didn't have time to cook this cabbage. And she had a cabbage and an onion. And I'm thinking, what she want me to do with this onion? So she says, cut the onion up in it and season it. So I took the cabbage home, and I was going to cook it before she went back to Grand Rapids.
Uh-huh.
And I cut the cabbage, cut the onion up, and I said, I bet some.
You don't always put onion in your cabbage.
Uh-uh.
I always put onion in my cabbage.
No, I put a whole onion. a whole onion in the cabbage, mm-hmm. big one too. Mm-hmm. And then I cut bell pepper up in it. I cut celery, not celery, bell pepper, carrots, mm-hmm. and I seasoned it really good. And I said, oh my Lord, I have cooked four cabbages since last Wednesday. She was here last week. I've cooked four since then.
And I made some.
And hot water cornbread.
I made some a couple days ago, and I actually put some zucchini in it.
Oh, really?
I had never done that.
I bet that is good.
I just love it. And some kale.
I mix my kale with my turnips and my mustards.
Why not?
Yes. Just collards.
Throw it in. See what happens.
Yeah. That's the making of a good cook. Yes. It's when you're not afraid to cook.
I can't wait to see your cookbook about your family.
It's going to be interesting.
And it sounds that's to be treasured. You can't buy things like that, you know, because someone in your family took the time to put a scripture on, mm-hmm. and maybe your picture, and this is what I remember that their favorite thing was to eat, mm-hmm. and it gives us gratification, too, that we can cook and make people feel good, make our family feel good, right?
I'm living to die, actually, because whatever I do while I'm living is mm-hmm. going to live with me, live with my children long after I'm gone.
So how did you come up with this book title, as far as, or when you give it, I see you giving it to other people too. I've seen you over the years give this book to other mm-hmm. people. Was it because maybe you felt like you had to give them kind of assurance to just be who they are? Is that what it, or?
Well, I came up with the title because at the time I wrote that book, I had been a Sunday school teacher. I had been on the Every Woman's Place, on the board, Every Woman's Place. Oh, okay. I was on, I was just on different auxiliaries and organizations mm-hmm. at Community College, the mm-hmm. Alumni Association, on the board there. And, you know, I wore so many hats, taught mm-hmm. school and designed a behavior program. And I just thought I was okay. And for all of that to happen to me, mm-hmm. I thought, this ain't supposed to happen to me. I'm a good girl. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm worth my salt.
Yes.
Why does things happen? Why is this happening to me? Mm-hmm. So that's why I said, whoever you are, it don't matter. Mm-hmm. You're going to go through some things.
You're going to go through.
It's okay, as long as you don't hurt anyone else. And I wrote that in the back. As long as you don't hurt anybody else. Whatever you do for survival, it's okay. As long as you don't hurt anyone else.
And you did put a who am I with bullet points about you're from Calhoun City, Mississippi, twice divorced and the mother of four adult children, and at the time four grandchildren, mm-hmm. but now six. Right?
Mm-hmm.
A competent Toastmaster. Wait a minute.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, you went to
got awards? Yes, I won awards and all kind of stuff.
Here in Muskegon at the local Toastmasters?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and okay. For those of you who don't know what Toastmasters is, I think it's so fascinating that you actually pay money
mm-hmm,
to speak in front of people, to give speeches.
Yes.
And that's something that people are not very comfortable, a lot of people. And so they come and they get better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen, I just joined a year ago. I haven't been in a while. But I joined a year ago and I met so many interesting different people, accountants
mm-hmm.
who kind of hide behind, you know, their shell. And mm-hmm. But they said, well, I've got to learn to give presentations. So that's why I'm here.
Right.
You know, or just people from different walks of life who just need to, or just want to learn better how to communicate with people. So yay! I'm so excited
so many,
to see that you
and I still practice. I still practice some of those things that I learned in Toastmasters. And it's obvious when you see others break those rules because mm-hmm. you think that's a no-no.
Yes.
You're not supposed to leave the podium before somebody else takes the podium, and
yes.
it happens so often. But then you got an eye for it that you stay
it's
there.
Very structured. Mm-hmm. Toastmasters very structured.
You relinquish the
yes.
pulpit or the rostrum. You just stand back, and that other person slides ready, and so it's never empty. It's never.
I love that
naked.
It's so positive.
Mm-hmm.
They give such feedback. Mm-hmm. You know, they give you constructive feedback.
Yes.
They count. They have somebody counting how many times you say and then everybody's just so encouraging.
Yes.
So I just think that's a wonderful thing.
It is.
How did you know who to go to publish this?
I went online. I had a child care center in Grand Rapids. And that, during nap time, that child care gave me freedom.
Okay.
So I would be in one area where I could watch the kids as they napped. And I could be on the computer and just search for different publishers.
Okay.
And that's how I came up with Exilibria. out of Indianapolis.
Okay. Do you still have copies?
Yes, I
do. How can people, as we wrap up, how can somebody get a copy of your book? Do they need to contact you?
They can contact me. They can go through Amazon. They can order it through Hages. They can order, it's an older book, as I say, 2010, but you still can get copies, you know, in any of the bookstores. Just give them the title in my name, and I have copies. They can call me.
Or Facebook.
Oh, I'm on Facebook every day. That's my friend.
Oh, before we wrap up, I saw you, and you were recording yourself, and you were sipping tea, and you were just listening to the crickets, like they are the birds, and you were just giving reflection. Oh, that was so beautiful. I hope you keep doing that. That was beautiful.
You know, I party with myself every day. I love my company. I don't have to have anybody in it.
That is beautiful. That is beautiful. Is that our takeaway today? I want you to leave us with a last thought of whatever you would want somebody to take away from this conversation with you. Would it be that to really enjoy yourself?
Yes. Yes. Live like you won't live another minute and enjoy yourself today, because tomorrow is just not promised.
What if there's somebody who just doesn't like themselves or their lot in life or, you know, there's some people who can't even hardly look in the mirror, you know, because they're just going through and they're just disappointed maybe with some things in their life. How can they just take a baby step into that self-love?
Write, find something you like to do,
okay,
and do it and do it well. I've been just where all those people are were, and it works every time.
So writing is a good
writing
step, a good first
just
step.
And write positive things. Just get up, write about what you're wearing, what the weather is like, and you know, start out simple. Write in your element.
Okay. Great. Well, I have so enjoyed having you today. Again, that was Irma Gordon Starr Gibson, and she was talking about her book titled Whoever You Are, Wherever You Are, It's Okay. And also Pamela Chandler, who was with us and talked about her book, God's Healing Hands, and then the two books that are coming. She has a devotional coming out, and then also a book called The Journey. So I will be having periodically local author spotlights. So if you have a book out there, or if you would like to me to consider you, then please hit me up on WUVS, actually 1037thebeat.com, or on the WUVS Facebook page, or even on my Facebook page. So you have been tuned in to The Gift of Gab. Thank you so much for listening, and I'm Teresa Taylor Williams, your host. I hope you have a wonderful week.
Gift of Gab, 103.7 The Beat.
It's 75 degrees.